All right. I have no idea how much that actually got on here. Welcome to Gripefest, a.k.a. the Toddcast.
Gripefest! Yeah!
Oh, shit. I am John.
I'm Bo.
And I'm TJ.
And we are your hosts for this episode of the Toddcast, where we're going to talk about some comics, some dumb random events coming up, some dumb random news coming up, and just stuff that is dumb and random, because it's apparently Gripefest week.
Gripefest!
At least I don't have to think of a title for this one.
There you go! It's a gimme!
So we got some stuff coming up in the stores. We got the Geek Flea Market and Labor Day Cookout coming up on the 1st of September in Cranberry. The following weekend, the first weekend of September, Bo and I will be down in West Virginia in Morgantown for West Virginia PopCon.
I hate you guys. I want to go.
Come on down. Hang out. It's good times.
Got to man the store.
Just come down early and then close. Come back and close. Whatever. Or just come down for one of the 2 days. Anyway, then we got the Legendary Basement Sale on the 21st of September. So if you've never been to the Basement Sale, it is absolutely ridiculous. It's over 500,000 books in just one room, all sorted, A to Z. We open the doors at 8 o'clock in the morning. They close at 7 p.m. And it is just absurdity. People are everywhere.
Bring your lists.
Bring your lists. You can
wear comfortable shoes.
Yes. There's some really good places to eat around there. There's street parking. It's a hell of a lot of good times. Elwood is also really cheap. So, like, you can eat there fairly cheap. We recommend the pizza place across the street. But they are cash only. So make sure you bring that. It's a good time. Make sure you do that. Also, that same weekend is Harrisburg Comic Con. Todd will be there because I got free tickets to Stone Temple Pilots. So I'm going to go there.
There you go.
And then the 5th of October, right in the middle of New York Comic Con, is the Waterfronts. It was going to be their anniversary sale from Old C3, but we decided to rebrand it as their grand reopening sale because last week we finally got a goddamn sign.
I saw that. It looks good, too.
I know, right? It's good. It's nice.
It's a little small for the wall that it's on, but it looks good. At least you can tell that, you know, the comic book store is there.
So we actually did research on signs, weirdly, to see what size we actually wanted. And it actually is pretty much the average size sign for a building that big because of the doorway. Because they say it should be around the size of your doorway.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
It looks weird because it's a rectangle. I wanted it to be like a big oval, like our normal logo.
Right.
But at least it's the right colors. Right. When they showed up with it, Chip sent me a message, and it was a picture of a crane with it, like, still wrapped as they were trying to raise it. And I was just like, oh, man, it's Christmas.
Is it being light up? Because I didn't see it at night. So it lights up?
That's cool. It lights up. Yep. We are super happy about it. I'm pretty sure Chip has dreams about it every night. And just, he's just in awe. But it's great. I'm really excited that it's finally up. It only took us 6 months.
Chip probably dreams about it transforming into a robot or something. To transform.
I'm gonna stop that conversation. Because I don't want to know where that's going to go. Unless it's a robot Todd, which would be even weirder. All right, so I guess we should talk about some comics at this point. How many do you have? Do you have two?
I have. You're gonna want to not do that first. What was either that or do Absolute Carnage maybe or.
I feel like Absolute Carnage is gonna be a long talk.
So maybe last.
So last. So let's do. I'll just do one of mine.
Okay.
I'm gonna do Batman Last Night on Earth number 2 first. So as we talked before, I didn't really like the first one, but the second one really made up for it. Like, the crazy, like,
Speed Force Tornado with all the speedsters in it, like, screaming for help. That was, like, so cool. And then the Unknown Soldiers. This is just nuts. And then, the giant swamp thing. And then you find out that, like, you find out a little more about, like, what's going on with where Superman is. And what Lex Luthor has been doing the whole time. And that is probably probably single-handedly the best Lex Luthor story I've read in probably 10 years. I bet, maybe not that long. Probably since, the Blackest Night one. Oh, that was, 10 years ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. That was good.
I enjoyed his action comics, where he was an Orange Lantern. That was probably the last time I really liked the Lex Luthor story. But this is worth it for the Lex Luthor story. Definitely check that out. he's using Starro, Black Manta, Grodd, and Brainiac's, crown? To control all these, robot Supermans, basically, right?
Okay, it makes sense.
Right? And then you see how, you actually see how the real Superman died, and how he killed him, and he went, whoops, now I gotta figure this out.
Did he just get blasted by a bunch of, kryptonite lasers or something?
They were, spikes coming out of the ground.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then they go into, they basically go down the River Styx, and you see all the dead superheroes.
Oh, of course they're dead. There's Kyle Rayner there.
Right?
No love.
Well, exactly. And my favorite part is, so they go back to Gotham, and you find out that the Talon at the time, who's basically kind of overwatching the city through the Court of Owls, is none other than Dick Grayson. And that's how that ends for this second book. So the twists and turns that this book took compared to the first issue, these were much better. So it definitely went from kind of a setup book to a meaty book. And I'm really curious to see how the resolution will be, because this is three parts, right? Yeah, so the resolution will be in the next one. I'm curious to see how that goes, why the Joker Lantern, if it actually plays, a key thing. Oh, yeah, in the entire book, he's asking if he can be Robin, because he's the sidekick to Batman, so he's like, can I be Robin now? How about now? And he just keeps asking throughout the book. But it was really good. I really recommend it. So if you haven't read the first one, go back and get the first one. I recommend reading both back to back. Because like I said, I didn't really like the first one, but it definitely set the second one up and it made it better. So.
All right.
Cool.
Okay. My pick this week, I'm tired of new stuff. I'm just really, really tired of new garbage. So we're going to jump into the Wayback Machine. And we're going to 1990. And
I was nine.
And we're going to review something that I read when I was younger. And it really stuck with me and got me into comics even more so than I already was. Ghost Rider, Volume 2, Number 1. This is the Dan Ketch Ghost Rider, not the Johnny Blaze.
So the inferior Ghost Rider is what you're saying?
I like Dan
Apparently
Ketch.
You haven't read this then.
By far the most inferior. Go ahead. I even hold Robbie right. No, I lie. Go ahead.
You gotta be kidding me. You cannot say that you like Ghost Driver over Ghost Rider. Get out of here.
But Johnny Blaze is better. Go ahead.
They bring him into this stuff eventually.
I know.
All right. Anyway, the writer is Howard Mackey. The penciler is Javier Salteres. And then you got a Mark Teixeira. Is that right?
Teixeira.
Okay. He's on inks for this. And then
he's a super nice guy, by the way.
He eventually does
super awesome artist
covers and stuff like that, which is awesome. Anyway, how we start off here with this Ghost Rider, I mean, if you know anything about Johnny Blaze, he did the whole deal with Mephisto and all that, checked in his soul and he got the Ghost Rider powers. This isn't that way.
Hashtag see Nick Cage movie.
Or don't.
It'll at least get to the basics.
Yeah. So this basically starts off with Dan Ketch and his sister Barbara. It's Halloween, and Barbara wants him to go to this graveyard where Houdini's gravestone is. So right. They just want to check it out. While they're there, they witness... it's not a drug deal. There's like some weird deal going on with this gang and the Hand exchanging a briefcase or whatever, and they witness like some killings because that goes wrong, obviously. So the Hand, this faction of the Hand, which is led by this ninja guy Death Watch, who ends up being like an ongoing villain in this run, they're trying to chase him down. They're shooting at him, and they end up shooting Barbara, and she's like mortally wounded. The chase ends up in like a junkyard where this motorcycle is sitting, and you know, Dan's flipping out. He wants to save Barbara and all that stuff, and he says something like, "He's like, I'd do anything to save her," but there's no deal. Mephisto doesn't come out or anything. He just sees the gas cap of the motorcycle glowing, and he touches it, and then boom. Ghost Rider's skin melts off and he comes rip roaring out of there, Spirit of Vengeance. Whoops the shit out of all the ninjas and everybody around. He's like, yeah. He kills them. Like, he has no qualms about killing. And you get to see all of his sweet powers on display. He grabs him up, uses the pendant stare. You get to see his new motorcycle.
That was the cool, like, yeah, it was like the one with like the shield looking
front. Yep, and yeah. It even does the thing, because I remember the shield would come down in front of the wheel and he'd use it as like a plow.
Battering ram and a plow.
That happens in the first book.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, and he does the thing where he drives up a wall and all that stuff. It's awesome. It's just like sweet Ghost Rider goodness. The character design on this is a little bit different than Johnny Blaze's. He still has the chain and everything, but he has like all these like punk spikes and stuff all over him. It's pretty cool. I like it.
He was a little more 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was 1990. They wasted no time getting right into the
spikes, chains, smoke, you know, the usual.
So yeah, like it was a pretty good start to it. You know, towards the end of the book, you have Death Watch like talking about, you know, what are we going to do with this thing now? A giant skeleton on a motorcycle after this. And then that's a pretty good start to the series. You can find this, you probably find it in back issues, fairly cheap. You probably find it in dollar bins. Mm-hmm. Trade paperbacks, not sure the last time it was reprinted in trade. But I definitely suggest reading it. Within the first 10 issues, you know, like any other Marvel series that came out in the 90s, he, you know, fights Punisher and has a run-in with Spider-Man and probably Wolverine. So just kind of how everything in the 90s worked.
It'd only be cooler if randomly, like, NFL Super Pro was in there.
The only thing I didn't see in the first 10 issues of that was no Juggernaut. So,
oh, yeah, that's true.
Because Juggernaut would always be like, you, if you could beat him and get past him, you're sticking around for a while, like the New Warriors did.
Fair.
So, but, yeah, this is really good. The art was great. Yeah, I mean, it's a 90s book. If you like that sort of thing, then check it out. I like it.
Cool. I remember liking them. I read them in post, though. Like, I don't remember if I got them in trade or in singles, but I remember reading them post because I was like 9. Either that or that might have been around when I started buying them off the spin rack, and maybe I didn't get all of them because I always had to, like...
Do you remember the one guy he fought? I think he even comes in right at the second issue. He's a mutant called Blackout. I think they used him on that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show.
Yeah.
But they made him, in this book, they sort of made him like a vampire where he had metal fangs implanted. And and he was a serial killer.
Yeah.
So that was cool, like using him as that.
Maybe we'll see him in the Morbius movie.
To go along with Danny Ketch, even in, I know you don't like new stuff as much this week, but... in the Avengers run, they brought up Danny Ketch and Ghost Rider because they're trying to get Robbie Reyes' powers under control. They kept saying no one knows where, you know, Johnny Blaze is. They went to Danny Ketch to try to teach Robbie Reyes things. Danny Ketch said he didn't want no part of him. Basically, he's a drunk now. Mm-hmm. They just left him completely out of it. But as everybody knows, he got sucked, or Robbie Reyes got sucked down into hell, and he is... face to face with Johnny Blaze because he's basically taken out Mephisto and he's ruling hell right now. So, if you want some Ghost Rider story, might have an issue or two here coming up with
I don't know Johnny if he took Blaze. Out Mephisto. I think he took... Because Strong Guy took out Mephisto, and I think he took out Strong Guy. Like, I think that's where that changed.
He's basically ruling hell.
Because for a while, Strong Guy was ruling hell, and it was hilarious. So,
all right. Get you some kind of an all-encompassing
I enjoyed Ghost Rider. He was one of my favorite 90s characters.
Yep. So. This is also back when they didn't put, like, Marvel books were super violent and bloody, but the blood was black because they couldn't, like, do red blood for whatever reason. They didn't want to, like, you know, mess up the kids or whatever. Right. I remember that, like, reading Wolverine books, and it'd be, like, the most violent thing, but it, like, his claws would be covered with, like, black blood.
Yeah. So. All right, Bo, what you got?
Like I said, kind of in TJ's boat, a few things I'd like to, would have liked to done, but meh. Couple books that I recommended because I don't have any in front of me there at my house was Dead End Kids and The Love She Offered. Yeah. Those were good reads, both by Source Point Press. If you can find them anymore, definitely take a look at them. Kind of murder stories, cool. Pretty neat. But the book I decided to go with this week was Dark Age by Red 5 Comics.
Been waiting for this since Free Comic Book Day.
Yes, bringing that up. If you guys joined Free Comic Book Day at any of our locations or otherwise, wherever you found, there was a, what was it, like teaser pages and stuff like that about this upcoming series. And we jump right into it. Basically, pretty simple, straightforward. A big natural disaster messed up the world. We don't really know what happens yet.
It looked like it ate away, eroded all the metal on the first, like, where it's all going on. Because you saw, the cop's gun dissolves, badge.
They don't actually go into that, but that's what I assume happened, and it completely just ruined the world. You have a young girl and her father. Mother gets killed, so it's just the dad, a newborn baby, because the mother was pregnant at the time of disaster. She died, but apparently they was able to save the baby. So you have a little boy, older girl, father. 13 years later, they're just in the woods, you know, trying to survive. Like TJ said, there's no metal, anything like that. And you come to find out they get raided by a raiding party. They're called the Confederates Rebels. And Rebels are pirates. So basically you get this determination that there are so far three like main groups how the U.S. has been divided off. You've got the South, it seems like, with the Rebs and the pirates. You have the North, which is kind of Canada and the U.S. They've all teamed up, which our main characters' groups are part of. The girl, she's kind of the main character, and she's the head of it. And then you have another group, which they stumble upon, which is dressed out in Star Wars garb, and they're basically the Empire. So it's pretty cool, and they even have the symbols for the Empire on their shields and stuff like that. Cool. But what they're mad about is, you know, all this is going on, and they capture a member of the Empire, and they basically converted paint guns into, like, actual guns now. So
that's kind of cool.
Yeah, so they was able to bring back guns, and that's a big, you know, question there. They go further on into it, talking about, you know, why would they call themselves the Empire? Why would they do this? What kind of idiot guy? And the one part of the story I didn't like is they correct this guy telling him, get woke, because it's her that's leading the Empire. That was kind of stupid. I hated that. But anyways, apparently we weren't woke enough, or this guy wasn't. So we continue on, and the main characters are going to basically a Native American like stronghold is another faction of this. And there's been a relationship between one of the Native American women. She's the head of it, head of the tribe, I'm assuming. And then our main girl character. They're trying to get a team, you know, get everybody to join forces to go against this empire due to the guns being created and whatnot. And lots of arguments ensues and whatnot. And basically the main character, the girl, who I cannot for the life of me remember her name, regardless... she passes out, and here the whole time during when all that happened in the past, she had a heart transplant, you know, given that there was no way to do it, like the meds that she was on was like rejecting her heart, mm-hmm. So basically she's passing out, or, you know, passing out, and it's not taking and she's dying. So, but she's still strong. Pretty good story thus far. I'm going to continue for an issue or two, see how it goes. But
I got sort of
it's a different vibe I'm getting from it, but it was the best of the week.
The best post-apocalyptic stories, I'm a fan of those.
Yes.
I sort of got like a I'm going to say like a Mad Max feel from the early part of it. I kind of dug that. I also got like sort of a Walking Dead, but without zombies feel. So, yeah, it's, you on your
it,
path.
It had just potential. Run
into different groups of assholes. Yeah. So.
It had potential, I'm going to be honest. It's worth picking up the reading for sure to see where the second issue goes and see what they do with these characters and how things are going to unfold. I was a little let down because I had expected more. But, you know, potentially...
I mean, we're only one issue in, so.
Potentially could go in because they was really hyping this book. Everybody went nuts over the Free Comic Book Day one. So I was excited when this came in, and we'll see how it goes. And it's kind of weird to get a Canadian maple leaf as their shield, and it's surrounded in an American flag. So that's kind of weird and cool at the same time.
Yeah,
so
maybe it's the United States of Canada.
Pretty much, but
who put that out? Red 5 Comics.
Yeah, okay. So it's a good indie
they
book.
They put out some other good stuff in the past.
They do,
too,
yeah.
So.
This has got potential. Definitely try it out. But
is this a mini?
It's a limited series. Yeah.
Okay.
The thing I've always noticed with them is like their books always start out really good, and then by like issue 3, they tend to peter off pretty hard.
I have that problem with a lot of new books, though.
Yeah. Definitely, The Dead End Kids. I just didn't have a copy of it to refresh my memory.
We sold out
very quickly.
Yeah, the company sold out that day.
Print run must not be very high on it.
I don't think it was. So.
It wasn't that high, and for a company like SourcePoint, they don't do super high print runs unless people have demand for it. A lot of stores don't even carry SourcePoint books.
Right.
Period. A lot of our stores do because we support a lot of indie companies, including SourcePoint, who were at our Three Rivers shows here.
But you wouldn't have it in like great numbers. You'd
right.
More conservative.
But because we carry so much stuff and a lot of indie stuff is really hit or miss, we would have been very conservative on our orders. I don't think any store ordered more than 20 of them, and they still sold out.
Are they going into a second print on that one?
I have not heard.
That I don't know. I don't believe SourcePoint usually does second prints.
They did with the Rejected, but that was a whole nother beast.
Yeah. I think it depends on the actual creative team if they want to do a second print. Because I know Stan really wanted to do a second print. And then that actually went to a fourth print, Rejected.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. So, but they might... I don't think.
And how are they? How's that company on like trade paperbacks, like collected editions? They spit those out.
Yeah.
Well, it says you'll be able to find it and read it eventually.
It's good. Definitely a good murder story. Like it.
Yeah, their Viking Queen book was pretty good. Their Rotten Tail book got turned into a movie.
Mm-hmm.
The Haunted Hyons Twisted book did pretty well. Rejected was pretty good. Nora was pretty good. There's a lot. They have a lot of books.
The Love She Offered, the other book I brought up, is also SourcePoint Press, and
right.
I'm assuming it's definitely sold out also. I have no more here. It's got to be sold out.
Like,
They were just good. They were a unique kind of story. So
yeah, like I know a lot of creators for that company, and they're all really great people, and they have some really great talent and... a lot of the books are really good, so I usually pick up number ones of all their stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So if you're into indie stuff and you're not into superheroes, definitely check out SourcePoint Press's stuff.
Here's
wow, another. This totally turned into a SourcePoint.
I know, but,
commercial.
Well, still, I give them. I got two things about them. One, please put barcodes back on your books just for the comic shop.
Yeah,
that
might have
been. That actually might have been a
because they didn't do it for those two books.
Yeah, but I think that might have been a. That may have been a needing to get it to press faster thing.
Yeah, it was crazy. But they did it. But anyways, but they make a lovely book. Like
the quality.
The quality of their books are top notch.
Listen up, Marvel.
You can't even hold one of your books so the ink rubs off.
Yeah. So All right, I'm going to switch gears and go back to comics. I'm going to talk about Knights Temporal, or Temporal, from Aftershock. Colin Bunn, Frank Gallen. Colin Bunn is hit or miss for me. There are things I love that he did, like Venom. I loved his Venom run. Like the Flash Thompson stuff. I haven't read the newer one. And there were stuff that I don't really care for, but this book, the first issue hit me pretty good. I like it so far, but it's only issue one. It's a lot of back and forth between these knights from the, what looks like the age of like King Arthur, and what then looks like the same guy shot forward in time. And it kind of goes back and forth between him and this witch, who then also ends up in the front. They find this weird crystally portal and a sword. And then you see them in the future hunting this other guy. And he's like, I was there. I saw you. It was like 50 years ago. You haven't aged a day. What's going on? So the only real question I have so far for this book is, Is it like a thing where it's going to be like almost like Doctor Who adventure style, where it's like he's going to hop to different points in time and do different things? Or is it the same guy being immortal, stuck in time? Or is it just going to focus on the two timelines? That's all I really want to know. Which I guess I'll have to wait to issue two. But I really thought it was cool. They have some really awesome like backer pages where it's like scripts and some like art. And then the thing I like about a lot of indie guys, especially Aftershock, is that they put all the ads in the back.
Yeah. So wasn't Image like that too for a while, where you'd get all your story up front and they'd condense Image, all the ads in the back?
Archie's like that now too.
Image has no ads still.
No ads at all.
Only in the back. They very little.
And they're always their ads for their other books. Yeah. But there's only usually like two or three
which
of them.
Which is fine. Yeah. Now, so, like I compared this week, that came out, and then so did Berserker, or last week, I'm sorry, in Berserker Unbound.
Okay.
Berserker Unbound got me better than that did.
Yeah, Berserker Unbound was more like a Conan-y style
guy,
right?
It was, but now he's in, because Conan is now in the MCU, or, well,
regular Marvel Universe.
Regular Marvel Universe, and
the 616.
I liked it, yeah. I liked it, so.
That's cool. I mean, I just thought Knights Temporal was pretty good.
It is, yeah, it was.
Like I said, I'm going to give it a second issue to see if it can hold it, but I thought it was pretty good. So.
All right. Okay, my next book, get into your DeLorean or your TARDIS or time machine of choice, because we're going back to 2009 for some Dark Avengers.
I loved this book, by the way. Hells, I was super pumped that you picked this book.
All right, so the first issue, I mean, I've read this run. I could talk about it for days, but we'll just talk about this first issue. It's a setup issue. This is post Secret Invasion. You got Norman Osborn, Green Goblin. He's the Nick Fury now.
He's booting Tony Stark, who was running S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right. And then he changes the name of it to Hammer and all this other stuff. That's stupid, whatever. But, he needs to create his superhero team, his Avengers, so that he can, talk to the public, bring them out, and, so the public has hope and they know that they're safe. Mm-hmm. He makes his team out of villains, though, which is awesome.
Right.
So what he does, he uses established heroes like Hawkeye, but he puts villain in the costume. So Hawkeye is played by Bullseye. Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's perfect. So the other people that are on this team is you have Moonstone. She's an old, Hulk villain, I guess. I think that's where she first jumped
Hulk
out.
Hulk villain turned Thunderbolt. A lot of them are the Thunderbolts that he ran.
He tried to get some of the Thunderbolt in there. That's a whole other usually villain team that ends up doing heroic things or anti-heroic things, whatever. But this is then you have Okay, Moonstone, she's Miss Marvel. She puts on the Miss Marvel costume and acts like her. So you got her running around. And this is Carol Danvers' Miss Marvel, not Kamala Khan. This pre-Kamala Khan stuff. Then you have Wolverine on the team. But it's not Wolverine. It's Daken. And he's posing as Wolverine, which I don't know how they pulled this off since he has the big arm tattoo and
I think they knew that they were different people. I just think that they went, this is the new codename Wolverine character.
Right. But even in this, though, like when you see him out fighting and stuff, he doesn't, like, not all the time does he have all three of his claws out. Because, you know, the one comes off the bottom of the wrist. He mainly is using the two on the top of his hand.
Right.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, but I mean, their faces are completely different. Moonstone and Carol Danvers, like, have two different, their bodies are completely different. Like, Moonstone's, like, taller and skinnier than
Carol Danvers. Not so much when you're watching, because Carol's in this book, and you see them, like, right next to each other. They look basically the same. A domino mask hides a lot, I guess. Yeah, so,
sure.
I don't know. I mean, I guess we have to suspend disbelief there. I mean, so, okay, then a big chunk of this first book, to get back on task here, is dealing with, they need a Spider-Man. So,
this is great.
So they have, what they have is Venom. It's the Venom costume worn by Mac Gargan, who was the Scorpion, like, back in the day. He has this costume on, and it's crazy. I mean, the costume is wild and stuff. Norman comes up with some sort of a drug to, like, sort of rein in its craziness. And they give that to him, and it sort of pulls into, it looks like Black Spider-Man, Black Suit Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And they spend, like, several pages dealing with that, because the costume is crazy, and it's trying to eat people and stuff. So.
Don't they, like, make a deal where it's, like... they'll just feed him, like, homeless people or something.
Yes.
Or bad people or something like
that. There was a book later on in this series, not too far later, where they're fighting another team, like a generic villain team, and he gets hurt, but he, like, starts flipping out, and the costume bites off the guy's arm and eats it. And then later on, because, like, Mac's in there, but he doesn't always have control over what's going on. You see Mac in the shower, like, puking. He's like, I think I just ate a guy's arm. So, yeah, but this book is great. The series is great. And you have Norman. He puts on the Iron Patriot costume. Yeah. So he's the Iron Man of the group. Right. And
is this the issue where he's talking to Tony Stark about stuff as part of it? Like, because part of the deal was, like, When he changed everything over to Hammer, there's this really awesome issue. It might have been the last issue of, like, New Avengers or whatever it was beforehand, where they're in S.H.I.E.L.D. Tower, like the Avengers Tower, and Osborn's taking over, and Tony basically goes, like, there's only two copies of the Avengers database. There's the one that's in here, and then there's the one that's in my brain, because he still is the extremist at this point.
Right.
So, that leads to this awesome run in Iron Man, which was Iron Man Disassembled, where he has to downgrade himself to the point where each issue he's going to an older and older suit, because he's making himself dumber and dumber and dumber, where he reboots his whole mind to a point previous to Civil War, which was an awesome run written by Matt Fraction. And at the end of it, like, he gets rebooted and there's a scene where he's, like, catching up on everybody's shit, and he's, like, drinking, like, five coffees, and he's got, like, stacks of newspapers and laptops everywhere, and Captain America walks in, and he's just like, holy crap, Cap, you're alive, but you were dead, and now you're alive again, and I was a dick. And he's like, yeah, that pretty much sums it up. But I couldn't remember if that was, like, part of that was in that issue.
In this issue, he's mainly dealing with Maria Hill and... Okay. What's her name? Hand, with the red streak in her hair.
Victoria.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's who he's mainly dealing with. He is taking over Stark Tower, Avengers Tower, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And this also is the time where the Sentry has parked himself at the top of the tower, and that's where he lives, basically. And he has that weird structure thing
right
on there. So, yeah, they also have the Sentry on the team, so they have their version of Superman.
Right. Well, he just stayed from the previous one. He was the only one that stayed.
Him and what is it? Ares is round two. Like that, except be their fill-in for Thor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I loved Dark Reign. Like it led into Siege, and like there's some really crazy awesome stuff that happened during Siege. So
hell yeah, like this whole run was great. I loved it. Yeah. Like you have Mike Diodato art, which is awesome. And this is when I think Bendis was probably at his best.
Yeah, because he was doing Dark Avengers and New Avengers, mm-hmm. and then you had some. Who was writing Mighty Avengers? Was that Peter David? I forget who was writing Mighty Avengers at the time, but Mighty Avengers was also hella good. Like, and then you had like offshoots of like all the Dark Reign miniseries were awesome too, because like you saw Bullseye dealing with being a good guy and how he like isn't that this in the mini like where he tries to kill himself?
Yeah,
he tries to figure out how to kill himself with like ricocheting a bullet so he can take it in the head.
And the thing with this group is they're always on the camera, like on the news and all that stuff, always in the media. So they still do underhanded things. They just got to try to make sure that the camera's not on them. And Bullseye's the best for that. Mm-hmm. You always see him like lurking around trying to do some bullshit, some underhanded stuff.
But he's dressed like Hawkeye now, which is even the harder part. Yeah, yeah. So I really enjoyed it.
I have never read that.
Really?
You are missing out, sir. Yeah. This is like Marvel.
Did you read Secret Invasion?
Yeah, but okay. When it comes to past stuff, I usually, in the past, I've always stuck with DC, everything.
I think you need to read this book.
So, I own several copies of number one.
Yeah.
But I don't, I've never read it.
This is another one of those books where, I mean, it's seeing some heat now because people are talking about it, like them transitioning this into a movie of some sort or whatever. But you can still find this in back issues. You can find it in dollar bins. I'm sure that I saw some trades out there. We just didn't have a trade of this first storyline. So, yeah, you'd be able to find this and catch up.
I think they did an omnibus of it, too. So.
But I read Siege. And
this here, the Dark Reign stuff, this is like the highest of recommendations from me. Yeah. Like this is comic books at its best. This
I think awesome. Of the that giant storyline that was Secret Invasion, Dark Reign, and Siege. I think while Siege has some really awesome highlights and so does Secret Invasion, I think Dark Reign as a whole was the best because everything that tied into it was really well written and it was so cool to see basically bad guys forced to do good things. And it was like, and the regular good guys were kind of on the run from the cops and from Hammer because, Tony Stark, like I was saying, like he's like, oh, it's in there. But when Norman Osborn goes to try to do it, it deletes. So Osborn doesn't have the Avengers file anymore, and nobody eventually has the Avengers file. So it's just really crazy to watch him go, because Victoria Hand kind of becomes like the new Nick Fury.
Yeah.
So
One of the better things, I love Bullseye, so anything with Bullseye is just awesome to read anyway. But around this time is where Clint Barton jumped out, and he like ended up taking the Ronin thing, right? So he's trying to figure out how, because he hates the Bullseye's running around with his costume on and stuff.
Oh,
so
yeah.
He's trying to figure out how to end that. And they put there's a 4-part mini dealing with that also. Mm-hmm. So it's awesome. It's definitely a must read.
Oh, and then the Spider-Man actually switches from Gargan to like that Spider God. That Brazilian spider god guy, where he's like a centaur, but the bottom half of him is a spider, and the Venom symbiote makes him human size, and then Matt Gargan's kind of like in withdrawal and going nuts because he took on the Venom outfit, the symbiote, because they ripped off the Scorpion stuff, and eventually I think he goes back to being Scorpion after that.
He does,
but they like super up his suit, and that was in a Spider-Man story, I think.
Matt Gargan got the Venom suit in that Marvel Knights Spider-Man series that was written by Mark Millar, because Eddie Brock was selling it on auction because like he was done with it and he was dying anyway of like cancer. So somebody got it, and at the auction, the suit didn't like him, and while he was swinging around, it dropped him in midair and like splat. Like the guy, the mob boss guy that had the suit.
Nice.
So then Gargan ends up with it at the end of that story, and that's how he became Venom. That was also a good story. I should review that sometime.
That, I think you just did.
Like two issues of it. Cool. There's a lot more.
Do you have another one, or can I talk about this, and then we'll talk about that?
Go ahead.
All right. Just a real quick review on this one. This is You're the Villain, Sinestro number one. So I'm reading through this, and so first off, just so everyone knows, Sinestro is like my all-time favorite villain, because he is such a douche. But he is a cold, calculating douche, and that's why I love him. So at some point, he apparently has ultraviolet light ring. I don't know where that came from, but that's...
No, it's all from the... I can explain that for you real quick.
Because I missed that part.
Yeah, sure. There's different forces now that are unlocking, and it's a spectrum force. Oh. And he has been in command of it because all the stuff with Perpetua from the Justice League and stuff like that... Like the slow force, or what I can't remember what it's called, but the
strength force,
but different forces that they, you know, and there was a new light force spectrum, and
this all happened since the metal thing, right? Like where they busted the source wall.
Yeah, oh, okay. So they've opened that up, and basically he's kind of almost like a Larfleet. He's like he very powerful and really only needs himself at the moment. Right. So. But it infected Jon Stewart a little bit, too. Go ahead.
Okay.
Quick question before you get further into this. I see that by the first few pages and the cover, he's wearing his old outfit. So is he like...
He's been wearing this old outfit for quite some time now again.
Did he ditch his yellow ring and he's just not down with the whole yellow...
No, because they... in the Hal Jordan stuff, Hal Jordan and the Green Lanterns, they basically thought he was dead. Like, him and Hal had this big strong thing... He got possessed by Parallax again, Sinestro did, and Hal blew up the planet. What is it? Where was they at?
Quark?
Yeah, they blew it up, but then now it's back. But anyways, it not blew up the whole planet, maybe, but I can't remember. But basically, they thought Sinestro was dead. So after that, his daughter took over, and there was like, there was a time period when it was, they was... all together, like Guy Gardner and Archilo were partners.
That's weird.
So they had it was actually kind of cool though. They had such a cool dynamic.
I can actually see that being pretty cool.
Yeah, but then it all fell apart, and from at the moment, haven't heard anything from him from a while, for quite some time. Is that his daughter's still running it? They don't do anything anymore because Kyle Rayner ruined that with the Sinestro's daughter because they were seeing each other.
Jeez.
So it's all back to everybody against each other. And whenever Sinestro's come back,
we stole a White Lantern, though.
He's definitely just back to old Sinestro.
All right, so we'll get back to your book. Sorry, I just had a question about an outfit.
No, that's cool. That. I was reading this and I'm like, I don't know which outfit I actually like more. But I actually think I like the classic outfit more than I like the Yellow Lantern outfit.
I like the yellow one. I'm biased, so I have it tattooed on my leg. So
I mean, I do like it, but I think this is just...
He needs to go back to being a Yellow Lantern.
So basically, this is a one-shot little story about him having to take out these like space gods, basically, by... His ring is so powerful that he can... talk to the almost like nanite community that keeps repairing these gods consistently, and their entire lifespan is 0.2 milliseconds total. And in those 0.2 milliseconds, they grow up, they help fix the guy, and then they die. And that's their whole lifespan constantly. So the first half of this book was kind of boring because it was trying to figure out what was going on with those guys and why should I even care? And then it happens. They start... Sinestro sends a bunch of little versions of himself into that universe that can actually exist in that short time frame to become what they are. And three of them try to talk all these guys into just turning on the gods and not doing the work anymore. But the other one is true Sinestro form. Instead of trying to convince them all to just, you know, tell this guy to F off, he observed their lifespan multiple times and gave them something that no one else could give them. He gave them, he doubled their lifespan by another 0.2 milliseconds. And in that time, they instead, like, learned to have a good time and live and love and make music and watch TV and drink and all kinds of crazy stuff, to the point where then they started worshiping Sinestro. So, like, all the other one, like, it killed the other gods because they stopped working on those gods while they were in the middle of a battle, except one. He kept one, and he turned their nanite people back onto working for them, because they basically said, like, why waste your life, you bunch of hippies, for the most part. And that god, because he knows that Sinestro controls those guys, is now an agent of Sinestro. And there's, like, a really awesome frame of him, like, kneeling before.
Bend the knee.
He's like, so long as you serve me. He's like, yes, my lord. And he's this giant god-type thing. So
that is a very, very Sinestro thing to do.
Right? So, like, you know, it starts out a little like, oh, I don't know where this is going. And then it turns into a extremely good Sinestro story.
Seemed like Sinestro made Luther a little bit wary.
Yeah.
At the end there, like, he says, you better be careful. Like, so.
Oh, yeah, because, like, there's something going on with the Legion of Doom. That's part of the, it ties into the Villains Month, but I'm not following all of it, so that's why I was like,
yeah, there was a little bit of Luther being wary and kind of concerned about what Sinestro is up to.
Like, all right, you got a bunch of villains. Of course, they're going to start backstabbing each other.
All right. So, dun, dun, dun. Now we're going to talk about the big book. So we're going to talk about Absolute Carnage number one by Donnie Cates and Ryan Stegman. I will first say I love the art in this book.
Yeah, it's great.
It's weird, though, because I feel like a lot of the panels are intentionally dark. And I don't know if it's just because a lot of it happens at night or in caves or whatever, but this seems to be the culmination of all of the things that Cates has been working on for a long time. Am I wrong?
No, that's pretty accurate.
Because I haven't really read any of it. I read a little bit of his Venom run, and I'm reading the Silver Surfer right now, but that's really it. I didn't read any of the other stuff.
I want to see how the Surfer connects into this, because I'm kind of lost in a little bit of things. But
I'm wondering if Surfer's going to show up at the end and kill Carnage, but that's just how I feel about it. But it's kind of cool. You get like a quick like tour of how Venom works and how his suit connects everybody together in what they call the Codex.
Also, so, if you haven't read Cates' run on Venom, don't worry. You can just pick this up, and it sort of explains what you need to know. You'll be missing some minor details. If you want to go back and read the Venom series, it'll fill that in, but you don't need to read that. You can just start with this.
Right. I thought it was cool. Like, you know, Eddie's walking around with his son who doesn't know it's his son. They walk through downtown, like right through Times Square, and there's all these wanted posters for him because Carnage framed him.
Right. If you didn't pick up the Absolute Carnage little thing for Free Comic Book Day when it came out, that's where that went on. Carnage was basically wearing Eddie's face, and he went into the prison and killed somebody. So he killed a lot of people, but
lots of people. So now Carnage is kind of hunting him down. There's this cool scene where Carnage kicks him in front of a subway, and the Venom symbiote saves them. It's also like seeing him with like the weird, like less menacing looking face is freaking me out, because it's like from like above the lip is like Agent Venom style, and then below the lip is like the big snarly teeth that we get from classic Venom.
There's a part in here, I believe, like when he's talking to Spider-Man or whatever, they get shocked and he has like this dumb face, like the Venom face. Like, it looked like a Scooby-Doo thing.
He looked like Doorman from Great Lakes Avengers. So you see, like, Carnage and them have a throwdown in the subway. And the whole time, Eddie's just trying to get his kid to safety. So they go to an apartment, apartment number 616. How about that? Yeah. And it's Peter Parker's apartment. So they go to lunch, and weirdly, Spider-Man's in his spider suit. Like Eddie knows who he is. Why hide it? Like, and why is no one in this diner just being like, holy crap, that's Spider-Man.
they made a comment in there, thought they was just joking. He was just dressed up.
Cosplayer. Oh, that's right. Yeah. The cafe guy was like, Comic-Con's not till October, which is true in New York City.
It wasn't until the burglars come in that it's like known that he's Spider-Man. And they're just right. Like, oh, crap.
Yeah, so it was kind of cool. Like, there's... They basically have a conversation about what's going on. They gotta... Basically, Carnage needs all the codices to power himself up, right?
And basically, the codex is anybody that's ever codices, worn...
They mention it in here.
Okay, but I'm just talking about the codex.
Right.
Like, okay?
A codex.
Yes.
Codices is the plural.
Right.
It's literally in this book.
Great fest! All right, so... Anybody that has ever worn a symbiote in Marvel has part of this.
Plural is codices, actually.
Yeah, they school you in the book on that. Gripe fest. Anyway, yeah, so he's got to pull all these... Go ahead, John, say it. What is it?
Codices.
There you go. from all these people that wore symbiotes so that he can summon Null or talk to Null, which is the symbiote god.
Okay.
And that's, like, what he's trying to do. That's his motivation.
And it makes him stronger as he goes along, too, by getting each little piece.
So they then go to the Maker to have him create a machine to pull the codices out of people so that Carnage doesn't kill the people. They just wouldn't have the codices anymore. So you find out the Maker has been working on this machine for like a year and a half because he already knew it was coming. So, which I can't lie. This is the creepiest Maker interaction I've ever seen.
If you don't know who the Maker is, it's Reed Richards from the Ultimate Universe. Yeah.
But this is like the creepiest thing I've ever seen him in. And it's really weird. But then they bring in Normie Osborn. Because he was the little red goblin?
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Right? So he actually has a codex in him that he needs removed, but they don't want to test it on Normie. They want to test it on somebody else. So then that makes them have to go and find Norman Osborn. So, like, then they're all at Rikers. And, like, I love this, like, who's this dude? He's the werewolf by night. John, what's his name? John Jameson. John Jameson's like...
Moonwolf or Manwolf.
Or Moonwolf, that's what I meant. Yep. Manwolf. He's like, look out. Venom's right behind you. And he's like, oh, wait, what the hell? So you then find out that he's actually been poisoned by Carnage. All kinds of crazy stuff happens. Carnage is literally throwing little baby chunks of himself.
Parts of himself.
At every single
prisoner,
inmate.
Yep.
And, the whole place goes nuts with all kinds of crazy Carnage symbiotes.
They wished for the Sentry to be there.
They did.
Which was cool.
A nice callback to where the Sentry ripped Carnage in half and threw him into the sun.
Right. Yeah. They're like, where's the Sentry when you need him? Actually, I think Spider-Man says that, so that's even weirder,
mm-hmm.
right? Oh, yeah. That
face!
Oh, yeah, where he's like, I'm not here to kill you. And Venom and Spider-Man are like, dear God, no. And he turns him back into the Red Goblin. And that's where it ends at that point. It was. I thought it was good.
Huge book. It kept going. Yeah. It's like three comic books in one.
It was, and they broke them apart nicely into acts.
It is a great start to a story. It was everything I wanted to read in this, and it definitely got me hooked. I'll probably even read all the little spinoffs, which I previously said that I was not going to do that. So now I'm interested. Right. Yeah, I loved it. I loved the art. I loved the story. I mean, this lived up to the hype. This is it comic did. Books, how comic books should be.
And I'm not usually like a Venom fan, like a Venom or Carnage fan. But I really enjoyed this book. So, and I think it's because it reminded me a lot of the Cullen Bunn Agent Venom stuff, where it was more like Cloak and Daggery style.
I'm going back and rereading that now because I never read all the Agent Venom.
That was real good.
I read like the first four issues or whatever, but yeah, I'm going back into that now and reading it.
And I think that's why I liked it a lot. So, how about you, Bo?
What do you think of that?
I did enjoy it. I'm going to continue reading. Picked up the tie-ins today because you got to stay away from tie-ins also. But
yeah, what was it? We had Scream?
Scream and Separation Anxiety. Separation Anxiety is just a one-shot.
So Separation Anxiety is all the... It's like Riot and all the kids.
Yeah. All the ones from Lethal Protector.
Yeah. So we'll see. That might only take me one issue to determine. I'll just...
And I think It's what's her name who was the She-Venom? First She-Venom? She-Venom? Second She-Venom? It's somebody else. It's not the original
Scream. She-Venom was Annie Whaling, but I thought she was dead.
Oh, yeah. Didn't the Punisher kill her or something?
Well, no. Like, I think they even talked about that in there because Carnage was... He had that big mass grave thing there where all those dead bodies were, where he's pulling...
That's right. Her body was in there. Right. Yeah. So
it's definitely good. It definitely lived up to the hype.
Yeah. I enjoyed
the like one of the most ordered books of all time.
As far as the spinoff books, I mean, like, this is, it might suffer from the whole, like, if Cateson's not writing it, it might not be like very good, but we'll see. I'm going to give them a chance, like the Scream and the Separation Anxiety and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to read all the tie-ins just because, like I said, I'm not a huge Venom or Carnage,
like
symbiote person, but
I didn't buy into War of the Realms, and I was happy that I didn't buy into that. So I have all my budget to buy into this.
Cool. I mean, I might check out Scream because I liked Scream as a character, but I don't think I'm gonna read all the times. So
I will, just to see. Start. I'm gonna give them all at least a chance. The one shots don't mean nothing. I mean, you read it right, and that's over. Scream, I give an issue to, and then the other ones. I'm not really... I mean, they're tying it in with Deadpool, and...
Yeah, like...
There's some goofy ones. I'm like, come on.
Did you start thinking about that? Like, once you knew, like, the plot of this, about how he has to go and get all the codices from everybody that's ever worn a symbiote, did you start thinking about who all has ever worn a symbiote? Yep. That's like the entire Avengers roster, because remember they did that whole story in, what, New Avengers, Mighty Avengers, where it was...
Yep.
They all... The Planet Venom, or whatever, they everybody had... symbiotes on.
That was everybody. Well, that was Guardians, wasn't it? That where they went to the planet.
No, no. Like the name of the story was called Planet Venom or something like that. It was like New York. But it was all the Avengers. Like the Wasp had a symbiote on. Even Wolverine had a symbiote on.
They kind of show some of those in there.
That's why he said he's got to go get all these codices from people just randomly wore it so he can be strong enough to fight the big guns.
It'll be crazy. That's like everybody. Everybody has had a symbiote on.
I'm wondering if that's why all those... Hell, even I have had a
symbiote on at this point.
I'm wondering if that's why they're doing all the one-shots and all the tie-ins, so it's like him going to those people and getting their codex.
Yeah.
So.
Because I think the last one is Hulk. Because I guess I don't remember the Hulk wearing one. Am I wrong? Right?
I don't remember either. But that's like
the last one-shot. Or last little piece. So apparently Hulk's the big gun at the end.
Huh.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure.
I remember reading those books when they came out, the Avengers books. I remember symbiotes having a hard time bonding to Wolverine because of his healing factor.
Yeah.
I remember him having an impossible time bonding with Cage because they couldn't get through his skin.
Yeah. Well, they bonded with Thanos too. So, I mean, Thanos is dead.
He's dead. No, but he can't.
Cates could bring him back, and then it happened. Who knows?
I don't know. I'm calling it right now, though. I think this whole thing will end with the return of Flash Thompson from the dead.
Did they mention him too, don't they? They mention Flash Thompson in that book, I think.
I think so, yeah.
I think they do, but they don't mention him in the grave though.
Mm-mm.
So, but he's been dead since the Red Goblin storyline.
Yeah, I remember that, because the anti-venom was there and all that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, because he had to give up sacrifice himself. Yeah.
I think Peter Parker's going to die.
Well, they've been talking about that for like that Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, but that's going to be like a one-off story. And yeah. I think if anyone's going to die in this,
could be
Eddie, because he's got like his son there and they're going to set him up to be like a new Venom. I don't really want to see a kid Venom, but...
Me either.
I mean, they could do it. I don't think it'll stick.
That's why I think it's going to be Flash. I think it's going to see the return of Flash. So.
Well, the Venom suit will be happy because it liked Flash.
It did. It did. So, all right, here's some stuff coming out this week at your local New Dimension Comics or other shop. We already talked about the Absolute Carnage tie-ins. There's also Age of Conan Valeria, or Valeria. Valeria, number one. Amazing Spider-Man 25, which has an awesome Spidey 2099 cover on it.
That's the second print.
Yeah. That's why.
That cover was awesome, yeah.
Right. Amazing 27. As Guardians of the Galaxies Volume 2 comes out. Batman Universe 2. Captain Marvel number 9, which has some crazy shit going on in there. There's an awesome Catwoman 14.
The art germ cover.
Oh, man. You need to buy that. Conan the Barbarian Exodus, which I think is a miniseries, if I'm right. Let's see. Detective, Frozen, Doctor Strange, Doctor Who, Event Leviathan number 2, Fantastic Four 13, Flash 76, Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 10, Ghosts in L.A., or Ghosted in L.A., which Boom put out. Go-Go Power Rangers 22, which I'm sure Bo will be reading.
I'm reading that too. Not gonna lie, Power Rangers books, both of them are probably some of the best books on the new wall
now. Been writing?
Yeah, 100%. Gwenpool Strikes Back, which is the new Gwenpool book. Hawkman 15. The Immortal Hulk Director's Cut for number 1. So if you're wanting to ever check out that series, check out this Director's Cut number 1. It probably will bring you to the rest of it. Ironheart 9, Justice League Odyssey 12, Loki number 2, Miles Morales number 9, Once in Future number 1 from Boom Studios, Orville New Beginnings number 2, the sweet Batman Damned pop vinyl, which is cool, which is Diamond Store exclusives. The Batman pop vinyl that came in this week, the black boxed one that you were scanning in when I...
Those were Batman Forever and Red Rain ones.
Was that like a reorder?
I don't know, but I got 1,000 of them, and I don't know why, but...
Come to the Ohio store and buy them up!
Anyway, so there's apparently a Batman Damned pop vinyl that Bo didn't order.
Damn it, Bo!
Powers of X number 2.
What would the pop
vinyl have? Greatfest! Punisher Kill Crew number 1, Punk Mambo 5... Road of Bones number 4, which completes that run.
The Punk Mambo is the end of that run, too.
Yeah, I gotta pick that up, too. Silver Surfer Black 3, Silver Surfer Prodigal Son number 1, which I'm kind of excited to check out.
The last part
Star
of
Wars
Symbiote
Target
Spider-Man.
Vader. Sword Daughter 8, Sword Masters number 2, which has a backer with Shang-Chi in it. Symbiote Spider-Man number 5, which is the last issue of that, right?
Yep.
Titans Burning Rage number 1. Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number 47. Usagi Yojimbo 3. Wailing Blade 3. There was something... What the hell was the book? It's like White something.
White Trees.
White Trees.
By Image.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. That's also on the list of stuff to check out, but...
Sound... What is that? Sound On? Sound Off? Damn. That's going to bother me. It's by Mad Cave. About a freak show. Same people that did the Angel book. The Knights of the Sun.
Show Off or something?
It's something show. Show or Show Something.
Yeah, hold on. Looks super good. Oh, God. Show's End. Show's
yeah,
End.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
By Mad Cave. They've been doing awesome stuff. like every one of their books is really good, and this seems to be really cool too. Plus, Watcher from Xenoscope also looks super good. Also,
oh, the show book also lettered by Three Rivers alumni and Ohio Valley store native Justin Birch.
Which I didn't know he did that.
Neither did I until today when he told me. I was like, oh,
he was doing that. Yeah, but he said it was good. Cool. And
all right, we talked way too much because we're now out of time. So, but we had some good talk, so we're not going to talk about any other nerd news. Not that there's really any right now anyway, but we will catch you guys again in 2 weeks. Maybe I'll have a fun story from Keystone or something like that, which is sure to be either awesome or horrendous, depending on how it goes.
So yeah,
I think this is the middle ground.
Gripefest was a success.
It's total awesome. Gripefest.
We didn't even gripe about stuff we was going to gripe about.
That's probably for the better.
Yeah. DC, here's my last thing. DC, get Grant Morrison off that Green Lantern book. Please, dear God. Please.
Or at least just get a better artist. Somebody that compliments his writing.
See, I would agree with you, but then the guy came in today and was talking about how good it was. So I was like, okay, I guess
I like them better.
He said you got to be in a certain state of mind. Don't forget.
I like... I really enjoy Grant Morrison when he works with Gary Frank. I really enjoy Grant Morrison when he works with Chris Burnham. I don't really like Grant Morrison when he works with pretty much anybody else, because I think both those guys get his style and it really, really makes the stories pop. So, all right.
Is that it?
And Marvel, I am John.
Marvel, take off. Kid, don't let Kelly Thompson write Deadpool, please, dear God.
That's happening. Just get over it.
I'm not.
And anyway. I'm Bo.
And I'm TJ.
Thanks for listening to Gripefest.